Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really happy to be able to sit with you for this retreat and also just to cheer on our 3-month intensive practice period, our exploration of our women ancestors as our study focus during this period. So I guess I'd like to begin this talk with a question. Guess what? It's a koan. Was Buddha a man or a woman? All of you who've been Zen students for a long time, or maybe those of you who have come for the first time today, might sense a trap. What's going on here? Was Buddha a man or a woman? Anyone want to answer the question for me?
Let's say yes.
Lovely. He goes to the head of the class. Of no class.
No class.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me about that question, at first glance, it may seem obvious. All the books tell us he was a man. Well, that's one thing. That's one way of looking at it. But men and women are one. And this is where I'd really like to, for us to begin this exploration of this Kilche topic. With this first truth.
Sensenim?
Yes?
Men, women, and non-binary people.
Yes, and non...
Thank
I was
you.
Going to get to that, actually.
Okay. You know,
that's already a bifurcation. But there's, you know, there are a whole spectrum, a whole range. Binary and non-binary together. First principle is we are one. No I, no you, no he, no she. We are one. So it brings me to another question, which maybe some of you have heard of this. You know the biblical story of Adam. Was he a man? Do you sense another trap? I'd have a different answer than Pat's. My answer is no, he wasn't. So I had this opportunity many, many years ago to study with a group of Orthodox rabbis as part of research that I was doing for a book I was writing. And, you know, I was really stunned to discover something maybe some of you already know, that the word Adam doesn't mean, it's not a name of a person. It means, it translates to mean human. A human. Just that. No gender identification in that name. So that's kind of interesting. It's like it changes the whole storyline in some ways. If we think of these early languages, they had... the way that they spoke to each other, pronouns didn't have gender attached to them. So that, as languages evolved, we became more and more divided or binary in an interesting sort of linguistic way, as well as religious way. And there's another interesting aspect to this biblical story. Some of you have heard me mention this before. When I was studying with those rabbis in the Talmud, there's the text that's in the center of the page, and then there are all these commentaries that surround it on every page. And so in Genesis, then there's the deal of a woman was created out of Adam's rib, right?
Sure.
But it's a mistranslation. The word rib doesn't mean rib. So these rabbinic scholars who have studied Aramaic, the original before Hebrew, the language that it originated from, that word appears like 47, let's just say 49 times in the Bible. It appears a lot, but nowhere does it mean rib. Nowhere. In fact, it means something more like spine. Spine. Isn't that interesting? Imagine how one word, taken a certain way, skews and changes everything that follows. So this, whenever we go about our business, do our practice, let us hold the provided, the provisional, apparent truth lightly. Let us hold it lightly. I was talking to a student this morning, and I said, just in the way that I asked the question, the earlier question, was Buddha a man or a woman? In our daily life, this is already a story. It's already a bifurcation, right? It doesn't include all the other ways of identifying oneself. So as Zen students, it's a very interesting kind of exercise of freedom, of true freedom, to receive what is offered, to hear what is said, hold it lightly, and then our job is to reflect the truth. Not as it is written, not as it is has been told to us. What is our truth now? What is truth? Not even our truth. What is truth? What is the direct experience? So if another possible answer to this question, was Buddha a man or a woman? Someone were asking me, I might say, I go by the pronouns she, her. It's our job as Zen students to constantly let go, let go, let go of our grasping mind, where we, in our natural, concern for doing the right thing, for being the right way, we may grasp after somebody else's, idea. We may grasp after one authority or another, but miss our own direct experience. Let go of grasping. Let go of what you hold on to so dearly, what you have held on to all your life. Maybe. Because none of it belongs to us. None of it defines us. Let go of making a formula in your mind, even a nice Zen formula. Let go of that too. I remember an exchange that I read in one of Zen Master Sung San's books, or maybe it was somewhere else. I don't remember where I read it, but he had Bobby Rhodes, this woman who became the head teacher of the Quantum School of Zen, and she was sitting right next to him, and she asked him something about being a woman, you know, something about women in the Dharma, and he turned to her and immediately said, Oh, you're a woman? And it just had that fresh vitality of, first, don't make anything. And then it's okay to be as you are, moment by moment by moment by moment. There's another thing I would like to say about this first human being, Adam. If you think about this, maybe we can look at it as being an androgynous being that split, like a cell splits in two in some way. So the first being, human being, gave birth in a way. I may be stretching things, but I'm playing with how we delineate. Obviously, whatever came first gave birth to the next thing, to the next emergence. So every single one of us contains our first ancestor. Not man, not woman. If we are a man now, if we are non-binary now, if we are a woman now, we are giving birth to something, to somebody. So I have three children. And then I've given birth in that way. There's something about the experience of giving birth, which I would like to speak to in terms of our practice. That letting go that I was mentioning a moment ago is the first order of business in giving birth. This is the one experience where a woman does not have control. You have to let go in order to give birth. So if we look to our very first ancestor, female ancestor, it is that quality of birthing, of its messiness, of its discomfort, uncertainty, fear, and I might even repeat that again, fear. How will it turn out? So as practitioners of Zen, we need to call all of those qualities to bring those to bear on our practice. Not for the faint-hearted, but, you know, humanity has been going through this for a very long time, and we're up to it. We're up to this task. We're quite well equipped, actually. You know, we talk about don't know mind. And really, there are two kinds of don't know mine. The first one, you can maybe define one kind of don't know mind as fear. It's kind of a panic, a worry. How's it going to turn out? This is on the relative side of things. I do not know what I'm going to do next. Probably say something stupid. And, you know, the storyline immediately, it goes like that in the blink of an eye. That not knowing is constrained and fed by fear. But of course, there's this other kind of not knowing, this other kind of don't know mind, which is its exact opposite, which is open. Which gives birth. And, you know, with love and compassion, nurtures the unknown. Nurtures it. On a very practical note, there is guidance here for us in how to meditate, how to do this practice. Sometimes, I don't remember which teacher it was, but we talk about the breath as a swinging door. We, in our minds and in our hearts, think of ourselves as separate. But when we breathe in everything. We inhale through the teaching of my root teacher, Zen Master Sung San. There's the breathing mantra, clear mind, clear mind, clear mind, on the inhalation. The door is swinging open. Everything can come in. The latest tragedy in the news this morning, the poor night's sleep last night, the delicious lunch you had, all these things that you said to somebody yesterday and wish you hadn't. It's just open, breathing it all in, relaxed. Then exhale, one long don't know. Release, release, let go, let go. Every fiber of our being is actually like a swinging door. Life and death are like that, coming and going through those swinging doors. So dismantling the perceived borders of our being, the dismantling the stories. We bring our breath freshly to each moment. We bring this question, what is this? What am I? And crack it open a little bit more. That is how we awaken. That is how we gain our freedom. So I'll end with a joke. Mm-hmm. So I started with a koan, the precious off. Now I'm just going to tell you a joke. Mm-hmm. I just heard this a few days ago, and I thought it was extraordinary. It goes like this. Maybe some of you have heard of it. There's this person who goes to the leader of a circus, and he wants to join the circus. And he says, I can do great bird impressions. Have any of you heard of this? Oh, great. I can do great bird impressions. And the leader of the circus says, "Ah, who cares? That's nothing special. Everybody can do bird impression. It's no big deal. So get out of here." So the person says, "Okay." And he flies off. He flies off. So we need to believe in our wings. We need to trust in the magic of don't know. We are usually so focused on imitating some other idea of ourselves, other people's idea of whatever. And, you know, nobody's looking at the real thing that's flying. That is your birthright. That is your own awakened nature. So find that in this retreat and fly off. Well, and come back. Thank you for listening.